Tennessee.
Lord, I've really been real stressed, down and out, losing ground. Although I am black and brown, problems got me pessimistic. Brothers and sisters keep messing up. Why does it have to be so damn tough? I don't know where I can go to let these ghosts out of my skull. My grandma passed, my brother's gone. I never at once felt so alone. I know you're supposed to be my steering wheel, not just my spare tire. So Lord, I ask you to be my guiding force of truth. For some strange reason it had to be, he guided me to Tennessee.
Yeah.
Lord, it's obvious we got a relationship, talking to each other every night and day. Although you're superior over me, we talk to each other in a friendship way. Then out of nowhere, you tell me to break out of the country and into more countries. Past eyes burn into ripples, where the ghost of childhood haunts me. Walk the road my forefathers walked.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. And as promised, my next guest, Mr. Claiborne Benson, who has spent 40 years as a photographer, producer, editor, at Channel 4, cameraman at Channel 4, and has since retired and found a new way to continue telling important stories, founding and leading the Wisconsin Black Historical Society and Museum. The society, founded in 1987, focuses on preserving the history of African Americans in Wisconsin through community-centered programming and personal narratives. Over the years, it has continued to serve as a safe place for the surrounding community to learn more about their heritage and see themselves represented in American history. Benson never thought he'd be where he is, and it wasn't an easy journey. Either. From a young age, Benson knew his family was poor. One night, dinner consisted of an old coconut that had been used as a doorstopper for months. His father left when Benson was three, leaving his mom and sisters. His mother moved the children from Washington, D.C. to Chicago to Milwaukee. Finally settled more permanently in Milwaukee, a man named Henry Moore took Benson under his wing. Without the Moore family, Benson said he wouldn't have had the freedom to explore what he wanted to be. One of those things was running for high school track team. Let me introduce my guest to you again, none other than Mr. Claiborne Benson. Good morning to you, my friend. How you doing?
I'm doing well, and thank you for having me.
All right, bring that microphone down a little bit to you.
Okay, sure.
You know how that works.
Yes, sir, I do.
Yeah.
Thank you. Is that better?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Well, the thing is, man, you did that for 40 years. So.
Yes, sir, I did.
So let me
put it in front of myself, put it in front of somebody else.
Yeah, so let me ask you, Claiborne, Black History Month, you're doing things over at your museum. And what are your thoughts where there are people now who don't want history to be told? I mean, you focus on Black history, what happened in the state. Well, what are your thoughts about people who think that we shouldn't be talking about
that? I mean, honestly, there are some good things that have happened in the issue of history, and there's some bad things that have happened. And history, it should not just be about Black history. It should be about American history.
Agreed.
And there's some good Europeans that have made a major difference in both African-American history and their own history. I mean, we wouldn't have the NAACP or the Urban League had it not been for the Jewish community and their efforts to help us to become a chartered Urban League and NAACP activities. There are many. I got a call the other day for people living along the Fox River area here, just south of Waukesha, and they have artifacts from enslaved people during the Underground Railroad. They didn't stop in white. They didn't stop in black homes. They stopped in white homes. White people who believed that indeed that this should not occur. Their stories need to be told too. I mean, clearly, you can't walk come up the Fox River and look at how many church steeples that exist within eye reach, within a block, a half a block. Where do you think those run Underground Railroad activities took place? Right here in Waukesha, within eye of the Fox River itself.
And you know, Claiborne, I would venture to say that not many people in Waukesha know anything about that.
Well, that may be the case, but there are many many people who do know the things that have happened, and it's been passed down from generation to generation. And people did it even at the risk of losing their own life, incarceration, destroying their family. They did it because they believed in it. And we're not talking about black people.
Now you think about, I mean, I was before you got here, I was having this conversation with the audience about the fact that this history of the state, and for people to try to envision people coming from the South and through the Underground Railroad and coming through Wisconsin at that time, Claiborne, even more segregated than it is now. And yet people were willing to put their lives on the line.
That's right, they did.
And put their lives on the line.
Not only their own, but their families as well.
Yeah.
They did it. I mean, right here. We're not talking about Milwaukee or some other part of the state. We're talking right here. And we're not talking, not only are we not talking about the individual families along the river in their individual houses. Certainly they stood out. We're talking also about the many churches, the Congregational, the Baptists, the Methodists, the Lutheran churches, all took a hand in helping Underground Railroad people make their way. And Waukesha is the regional capital for that. We're not also talking about Waukesha's and the regional Waukesha's get angry over the passage of the 1850 Great Compromise between Henry Clay and John Calhoun, who were so angry with the federal government for doing this, rebelled and broke Joshua Glover out of jail. And it's one of the things that led to the Civil War.
So let's talk about who Joshua Glover was.
Another runaway slave who makes his way from St. Louis, Missouri, settles in Racine, and eventually is captured and brought to Milwaukee County.
Let me ask you, how St. Louis, I didn't know they had slaves.
Well, you didn't know that there were slaves in Wisconsin. And there was. Right. There was slavery in Wisconsin. But there's slavery in every northern city and state in the Union. Every one of them, there's slavery.
At that time,
yes, sir.
That slavery going on, it was in the North as well.
Yes, sir. And not only there, in the border states, is almost as many slaves in the border states. Border states would be Missouri, Kentucky, West Virginia, Rhode Island. Those are border states between the North and the South. There are just as many. And when Lincoln writes the Emancipation Proclamation ending slavery, he does not include the border states. And so how many and thousands of people that would continue to be enslaved as a result of the Emancipation Proclamation as we know it today?
So let's talk. Let's begin to talk about how the Underground Railroad came into existence, came to be, and how it wound up coming up through Wisconsin. And I know they want Canada, maybe that was the straightest shot, but how did that come to be? And because I remember reading Claiborne about many slaves stopping in Native American were accepted by the Native Americans, and let's talk about all those things.
Well, I came up with four primary reasons why Europeans participated and became engaged in the Underground Railroad. Four of them. I don't want to tell you what they are, but I guess I have to since this is radio.
Right.
Normally I would
show it.
Normally I would ask the members and the people in the audience.
Right.
What are they? But then let's go through them. One is religious reasons. Religious reasons. I mean, obviously, one that would be a conviction of a person who has religious commitments and make a decision that they don't want to do that. And the churches themselves would have a stopgap that they would say that indeed we don't want our congregation, and if you're a member of this congregation, we insist on you not participating in the Underground Road or slavery. We insist on that. So religious reasons would be one. Political reasons would be another. The Republican Party's platform was anti-slavery. The Whig Party wavered one way or the other, depending on where they were. Republican Party was very firm on their position. And if you wanted to be a member of the Republican Party, you clearly had to not participate in enslavement of people. Another reason would be what's called Free Soilists. The regional headquarters for the Free Soilists was in Janesville, and they would and they had national conventions. I didn't mean, and they were a kin cousin to the Democrats. Democrats were clearly pro-slavery, The Free Soilists were anti-slavery. Not that they liked black people. It meant that they did not want to participate in slavery.
So Claiborne, if you hold that thought, man, we've got to go to a break. Our phone number is 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. My guest is Claiborne Benson. He's the curator of Wisconsin Black Holocaust Museum.
No, Wisconsin Black Historical Society.
Black Historical Society. I'm sorry. Wisconsin's Black Historical Society. We'll be right back. You can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Mr. Claiborne Benson. He's the curator of the Wisconsin Black Historical Society. And I'm glad he's here. And we're going to, it's Black History Month, so we're going to take a walk down the history lane of what took place here in the state of Wisconsin. You know, Claiborne, before we went to break, I was asking you about how Wisconsin wound up being the path. And I think even before that, you were pointing out that slavery wasn't just in the South. Slavery was as well in the North. So let me ask you.
Before you ask me, I finished the last one of the four objects in which I talked about that made that slavery took place.
Go back over the first three.
The first one was a Republican Party, the Free Soilists, religious reasons, and then the fourth and final one, at least under Claiborne Benson's category, would be the ancestors. That slavery didn't just start in Africa and didn't just start in Wisconsin or the United States. Europe had enslavement too, and whites, Lloyds, enslaved serfs, and which were Europeans, and they passed down through their family members. We don't want no parts of slavery in our family because we endured that, and we don't want any parts. We don't want you enslaving anybody else. And so many of those Europeans remember that, and they themselves fought against enslavement.
So Claiborne, so they had white slaves.
That's right.
They didn't have black slaves.
I'm talking about in Europe.
So they didn't want to have black slaves, maybe, or they weren't.
So it wasn't a question about whether they had. There weren't any black slaves in Europe to be had. White owners or lords made the decision to have these people as right. slaves, and they were white, and they harvested the fields and did all of the dirty work that they didn't want to do. And so the people got sick and tired of it. They wanted to have their freedom as individuals and be treated with respect. So did black people. And they passed that down through their loved ones, grandchildren and great-grandchildren, that they didn't want to. And there were truly people in Europe who made a decision to be abolitionists long before they left Europe. And they left Europe with the understanding of fighting against slavery and coming to Wisconsin, becoming abolitionists, helping people make it from one location to another location, scheduling ships that would go out, feed and clothe people making their way. And many of them came through Wisconsin, Michigan, Massachusetts, and other places. Yes, it happened in Wisconsin. Those four reasons were their motivation.
So when did slavery begin officially in this nation?
I think it was always. In New York and the southern, like New Orleans and South Carolina, there's slavery. Those are deep river ports, and so they were able to bring ships in, and they brought slaves in. They didn't want to do the work, the hard labor work that was necessary to create this country, and so I'm reading a book now that talks about how they had to rotate the enslaved people, because the work was so hard that they were dying off in large numbers. They're only talking about bringing 20 over this time and 40 the next time, but clearly many of them are dying away because of making roads and clearing trees out. The work was backbreaking, and people simply died.
So you would think that if they're only bringing small amounts like that over on such a long voyage, they would lose a lot of them in coming over because of diseases and those types of things.
I don't think that was the major issue at the early point. But then when different countries took more of a leadership role in enslaving people, the numbers began to increase in large numbers, just like more and more Europeans began to come over. We're talking as early as 1619 and making our way all the way through the 16th century, then the 17th century, and then and the 18th century until slavery is outlawed in 1830. But they still came. They still came, and they still brought them, even when it was against the law. And they're in Wisconsin, and there are many forms of enslavement going on in Wisconsin. I mean, there is domestic slavery. There is working with traders fur traders, hauling, trappers and guides and all of those. And then there is the lead mines in the western part of the state. They had the largest number of enslaved people. It's difficult to see that given that you see that the people here, but they had the largest number. We're not talking thousands and thousands of people, but we clearly are talking 8,000 people. And in the lead mines, we're talking at least 500 to 600 enslaved people working throughout that period of time.
So, Claiborne, I got to get you a hold on. We got to go to a break. When we come back, I'll let you go ahead and talk about the correlation between the slaves and the state of Wisconsin. Claiborne Benson, the curator of the Wisconsin Black Historical Society, is my guest. You can join the conversation at 844 867-2789. We'll be back. At 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Mr. Claiborne Benson. He's the curator of Wisconsin's Black Historical Society. And Claiborne, I'm going to get out of the way and let you take us on that trek, on that journey to where Wisconsin fits historically in what was slavery.
Yeah, sure. And slavery did exist in the state of Wisconsin. In the western part of the state, the primary and the largest number of enslaved people are lead miners. And so lead miners in the western part of the state.
Wow.
Lots of lead.
And lots of death. Lead being as poisonous as it was.
Well, they didn't view that at the time as being. Lead went on to make a number of products.
Right.
However, the lead and zinc, in which was harvested in the western part of the state, made bullets for the Civil War and the Vietnam War. So the bullets coming out of that was for government and military purposes, and thus it was necessary for this country. So bullets was what was manufactured out of there. And so, you know, we're talking 500 to 600 individuals in that whole region, but there's slavery going in other parts. In the northern part, there's cutting down of trees. The Bunga family is very active in cutting down trees in the northern part for lumber to be spread throughout there. But African Americans are coming up the Mississippi River because they see Wisconsin as being an abundance of economic growth. There's nothing happening in Milwaukee whatsoever. Native Americans are active. We're talking 1818 through 1840s, but the western part of the state is booming with economic growth and progress, and people are coming up the Mississippi River, and they're settling on Iowa, they're settling in Wisconsin, and they're just coming because they think opportunity exists and jobs exist. They see them.
Claiborne, when you say the western part of the state, I'm not, you would think, you know, right in the middle of the state would be where the growth was. Why the western part? Because of the Mississippi River?
That's one of the reasons. But the other reason is lead.
Oh. Okay.
Lead is harvesting lead out of the earth. Is making a great deal of money. Ships are coming up and putting those ships. Galena, Illinois is the regional capital for this area. And so that they're putting all of that lead onto those ships and taking them to various places for making and right. manufacturing products out of them. So lead is important. But I can't underemphasize with you that individuals are coming, both in the groups come to Pleasant Ridge community, Cheyenne Valley community, and small individual groups and families settle all throughout the western part of the state. So the western part of the state is very, very important. So this is the 1840s. The first African American city is founded by a guy by the name of Moses Stanton. It was called Stantonville. It's in the up Highway 57 on the way to Green Bay, Wisconsin. Stantonville, they named the city in his honor. But later they named it to Chilton. So when
I've heard of Chilton.
Chilton, Wisconsin, is the first African American. 1845. It is the city. So when did the state become a state? Do you know that?
No.
You don't know that answer?
No.
Okay, hold on. The state becomes a state in 1848. But in 1846, the founding fathers said, we think that African Americans should have the right to vote, at least those that are citizens. And so the whole argument before the state legislature is just, should African Americans be legal citizens of the state of Wisconsin or this country? And once that was resolved, in 1846, they put it in the Constitution, and it had to be voted, and it was voted no, that African Americans should not have the right to vote. It became a state in 48 with it taken out of the Constitution. But African Americans said, hold up, stop. Along with issues related to women, because women were very significant. We're talking about the issue of women's rights now, and that's in the referendum vote of 1849. 1849 referendum vote. And there are two issues, women and their rights in banking, and the other issue is, should African Americans have the right to vote? And so that they did have that big discussion. They did have a referendum vote. And the outcome was that some rights were taken away from Indian women, but more than anything, for African Americans, we lost the right to vote for the remainder of what seemed to be time. And so so we go from 1848 through the 1850s, and through the 1850s, there's marches and demonstrations all throughout Milwaukee's history. The streets in Milwaukee and other places, there's demonstrations of all sorts about whether or not African Americans should have the right. The Civil War comes.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
So how is it that blacks were able to vote before we were freed?
Before we were freed?
I
don't know that that's happening in Wisconsin. Now, that may be happening somewhere else.
No, I mean, we weren't freed until 1865. Right. But you were saying in 1850, 1849.
That's right.
They were arguing about whether or not blacks could vote.
Should have the right to vote, yes.
Yeah.
And that wasn't an argument. And they did a referendum vote. And the outcome of the referendum vote said we could not have the right to vote. And so that folks moved on. But there's a man by the name of Ezekiel Gillespie.
I've heard of him.
Ezekiel Gillespie founded St. Mark's Amy Church. He made the decision, along with Sherman Booth, to sue the state of Wisconsin because African Americans should have the right to vote. And so when the Supreme Court looked into it, when the judges of the Supreme Court made a decision that this is something that we want to examine, they found out the calculation of numbers from the 1849 referendum vote were calculated wrong. Now, you can call that any way you wanted to. You could call it cheating. You could call it wrong addition. Whatever you want to call it, because history treats it very gently now. They're saying our ancestors didn't cheat. But the Supreme Court found that wrong was done in the 1849 outcome, and that indeed African Americans should have the right to vote. And they made a decision in 1866, that African Americans do have the right to vote in the state of Wisconsin. Significant and important because it gave citizenship. It gave rights. It gave the individual rights of all men to have some outcome of their faith.
Claiborne, that really just blows my mind that we could talk about blacks having the right to vote in the state of Wisconsin, yet they weren't free.
Well, they were free in 1865.
Yeah.
The war is over, and the Emancipation Proclamation frees them. And we can talk about that in a minute. But I think something more important than to talk about that rated to second would be that the veterans, both white and black, had to do they did a vote on whether or not African Americans should have the right to vote. And we're talking black and white veterans, and there's 525 Civil War veterans from the state of Wisconsin, but there's hundreds and hundreds of thousands of white veterans from the state of Wisconsin, and they had the option to vote to say, give this your full attention, Supreme Court. We want African Americans to have the right to vote, and they did. We're talking returning veterans who voted to say that African Americans should have the right. I'm talking about white veterans. I'm not talking about black veterans. So when we talk about history, we need to include white folks too, because they were truly engaged.
You know, Claiborne, this again is the reason why anytime you hear people say they want to do away with history, just the few minutes of the information that you've given us thus far really points out to people, hey, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And because you didn't know it, you think about the impact of what has happened historically in the country and in the society, and you realize all of it didn't happen overnight. It was progressions of what took place and how freedom came about and civil rights.
It's interesting, very much so. So while we're doing that same period that we're talking about, the emancipation is, and all of your listeners have heard about Juneteenth Day and the Emancipation Proclamation. Abraham Lincoln writes it in 1862, and he puts in effect January the 1st, 1863. But we learn about it, at least in Galveston, Texas, 1865, June 19th, 1865, when General Garrison goes down there and say that you're all free. But what they're not saying is that you were free 2.5 years earlier. And Abraham Lincoln writes it in 1862. It goes into effect January the 1st. Now, I'm repeating myself there because that's important to know. Many enslaved people get their freedom and go. But there are so many that still maintain their still stayed into slavery because their owners wanted them to work one or two more crops and kept the information from them.
So Claiborne, even though the Emancipation Proclamation came into existence, was ratified, and all of those things, and there were owners who still didn't support that, still didn't agree with that.
But there are things wrong with the Emancipation Proclamation.
Okay.
Historians now say that that was a good first effort.
Right.
That wasn't enough because Abraham Lincoln writes it, and he says, I'm going to go around Congress. I don't need Congress to sign off on this. He right. goes around. He makes it an executive order. Now, we know what executive orders are. It only lasts the term of that president,
right.
and then it expires. Does that mean we would go back to slavery? Yes, it does mean that. So it's an executive order. It does not include the northern states or even the border states. And I talked about that earlier. The border states had just as many enslaved people as the southern states. So that's still a whole population of generation would remain in slavery. And so that's something wrong with that too. If you look at it, on the first page of it, in the first paragraph, it says, all the southern states, it only applied to the southern states, and of the southern states, Virginia and Louisiana had exceptions. One quarter of the counties in each of these, Louisiana and Virginia, were exempt from the Emancipation Proclamation. Now, Lincoln's feeling was that there were troops there and that the people would automatically be free. But in truth, that wasn't guaranteed, and they are exempt from that. So Lincoln brought forth, 5 years later, brought forth the 13th Amendment. The 13th Amendment is the law that ends all slavery, not the Emancipation Proclamation. The 13th Amendment ends slavery completely of all people. The few Europeans that were enslaved, Native Americans that were enslaved, and the 97% Africans that were enslaved.
You just said Native Americans that were enslaved.
Yeah, they were.
I don't
There were some.
So, oh, I
there were some Europeans that were enslaved too. A few, yes, they were.
And so, you know, we don't hear about Native Americans being enslaved.
You probably didn't hear that there were African Americans who enslaved African Americans, and there were.
In this country?
In the United States, yes. Mostly in the South.
No, didn't. And again, we don't have to keep repeating it, but the importance of history.
And there were African Americans who fought on the side of the South in the Civil War. Yes.
Listen, we've got to go to a break. My guest is Claiborne Benson. He is the curator of Wisconsin's Black Historical Society. You can join us at 844-967-2789. We'll be right.
Up to be somebody who just loves to learn, and a little child grows up to be somebody who just loves to burn.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. My guest is Claiborne Benson. He's the curator of the Wisconsin Black Historical Society. And Claiborne, there's so much history about what transpired, you know. And, you know, you don't, unfortunately, unless you take some advanced history classes, children don't know this unless they go through this on their own and search out as you did. It's not something that is something that's passed on. Are we making a mistake with that?
Yeah, kids need to know. They won't know the details, but they should know about their own family history. And that's crucial to understand what their family went through to make it possible for them to be here. I mean, I was lucky enough to be able to trace my family history and to get to know my sisters. And I think that that's crucial to having a good foundation of understanding.
So as you're talking about Wisconsin history,
yes,
and what transpired and took place, I can't, for the life of me, the entire state of Wisconsin was inhabited by the natives. And by the natives, the Native Americans. And so when they came, when the Americans came up the Mississippi River and settled in the western part of the state, had the Native Americans already been removed from that area, or was that, were they still populated there? And
well, they were populated all over the state.
So
even, Wisconsin, that is. Yes.
So even when the slave masters and the slaves came, they had to move out the natives, or the natives, did they coexist?
They coexisted.
Okay.
And as I explained earlier, the most populated area in the early 1830s is the western part of the state. There we have Henry Dodge, who becomes the first territorial governor. He brings from Missouri. He's from Missouri. He brings five enslaved people with him. He promised them before he leaves Missouri, that coming to the state of Wisconsin, that I'm going to free you because we're going into free territory if you come with me. And they come with him, but he doesn't free them until 10 years later. 1837 was when he began to free them. And so thus, he gives them 40 acres, 20 acres, and 60 acres of land as compensation for doing that.
So the slave owners had the authorization at any point in time to free the slaves?
Yeah, they do. They weren't bounded by laws like in Virginia and other places where they could not free them. They do have the power, but in some cases they're quite selfish. They needed their labor.
Right.
And And if you were to look in these lead mines and look how dark, dirty, and hard work that was, you would know that you would not want to be able to afford it. But there was a lot of money to be made in the lead mines. And so that Henry Dodge, he becomes the governor of the state of Wisconsin. He eventually frees his enslaved people, and he goes on to be the first United States senator representing the state of Wisconsin in that period of time. But Wisconsin also raises 525 Civil War veterans, and the 29th F Company is number one in that effort. It's a company just designed of African Americans, white officers, but primarily African American soldiers, and they're quite active and victorious in their fighting campaign. And the men, John Jefferson commands the 8th Wisconsin. He is a person of color. He is a grandson of Thomas Jefferson and Sally Hemings out of Virginia, John Jefferson. And he commands the 8th Wisconsin. He commands the 8th Wisconsin. He comes in as a second lieutenant and makes his way up to full-blown colonel.
This is in
1862,
63, 64,
65.
That's inconceivable.
And, well, no, not really. And he goes on. He's active in the Tennessee and the Vicksburg siege. Do you know where Grant is most active in his early victories? It's because of men like Thomas Jefferson, John Jefferson, and the men who follow him. He's wounded twice, and he's loved and revered by his men. But I wanted to say before we move on was that out of all the units in the state of Wisconsin, African Americans belong to every one of them, not just. So there's only 300 and so men in the 29th F Company, and there's 525 throughout the entire state. Now, they may not have been frontline fighters. They may have been doing laundromats. They may have been cooking. They may have been moving ammunition from one location to the other. But every unit had African Americans in it from all over the state of Wisconsin. And that's very significant, important.
You know, Claiborne, the depth of this history is critically important to everybody, but especially the young black children. They should, especially who don't know at all about positive
role models. The real joy, the real contribution of these men came when they got out. So we have Peter Thomas, who becomes a coroner.
So why don't we do this? Before you get into that, we've got to go to the break. 844-967-2789. Tom, I see you. We've got to go to a break. It's none other than Claiborne Benson, who is with Wisconsin Black, curator of Wisconsin Black Historical Society, and you. It's Black History Month, and we're having a Black History lesson. We'll be right back. 844-967-2789.